Well, good morning. Scott Wells with the Magic Podcast, Magic Word Podcast.
It
makes a big difference. That's right. And I got Eli Portales. Hello, Eli.
Hello.
And, of course, Chase Hasty.
Hello.
Good to see you. And that these guys, come on over. I'm going to talk to you also. What is your name?
Louis.
Like Armstrong, or what's your last name?
Villamonte.
Very good.
Ooh, that's a real magical name right
now
there.
It's about noontime right now, and so shouldn't some of you guys be like in the youth thing, or have you been involved with this at all?
We just got out of there.
Yep. You did? So is it taking lunch break, or is it over for the day?
Just had lunch with Lance Burton.
Cool.
Pizza party.
Did he have some stuff to talk about, or did he give a lecture? Oh, he gave a lecture this morning, didn't he?
He did. It was fantastic. The stuff he said, he's like, oh, gosh.
Great lecture. Very useful stuff that you can take and use in the real world.
He's a really, really
nice. They asked last night in the panel discussion, you know, what words of advice would you give to the young? And he said, I don't want to tell you now, I'll tell you tomorrow. So
yeah.
I'm curious what he said.
Work on your act. Get in front of an audience. I mean, he developed his act not in front of a mirror, but in front of an audience. I mean, he was doing 3 shows a day at the amusement park place.
Oh, yeah, way back when.
With Matt.
In Louisville, yeah.
Yeah. He talked about when I always thought he had the street sign. And he talked about it having like 3 tables. And then he told the most hilarious story how he got that street sign. Him and a buddy are just driving down the street, right? They're just driving down the street. The street, somebody ran over the street signs laying there on the side of the road, and Lance stops the car, turns to his buddy, doesn't say a word, gets out of the car, pops the trunk. His buddy gets out of the car, grabs the street sign, places it inside the trunk, shuts it, they drive off. Like nothing ever happened. It wasn't planned, nothing.
Yeah.
And that evolved into the famous Dove Act.
Right.
Right.
And it does land on the land.
So did he have that idea that he needed a street sign for his doves to perch?
They just wanted the street sign.
Oh, and then so the dove actually came as a result, like, what are we going to do now we got it?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I found it really interesting because he trained his doves to fly to the post while he was doing his show. I mean,
have food or what up there?
Yes, he would have a little thing of food, and that's how they would eat their dinner, he said.
Yeah.
That's it. He wouldn't feed them during the day, and so he has a street sign, and gradually he just puts the dove up there on the street sign, and then steps back a little, and the dove would hop to get its food.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the dove
pop his finger onto the sign, yeah.
And then the rest is history.
Wow. So what else did he say as far as some other things? Remember anything, Louis? Memorable.
Just lots of horror stories.
Horror stories.
Like what? What happened bad?
He's had a kid with cerebral palsy.
On stage that he didn't know until he got him up on stage, I guess?
Didn't know. Kid had to crawl up onto the stage, and it ended up being one of the best things. He got a standing ovation because he threw the kid on his shoulder, and then he ran down and
your mom might be listening to this.
But he talked about how it's better to do more shows than to do only a couple shows at a higher price, you know.
Mm-hmm.
get all the shows that you can for all the experience that you can.
Charity shows, birthday parties, anything
every,
you can do.
Any chance you can get to do a show, do it in front of a live audience.
I remember Jeff McBride was always saying you should be a magician 24/7.
Yep.
You know, so was that kind of along the same line?
Yes.
Perform when you can and where you can, whenever you can.
Yep.
You should see me when I wake up.
You got cards in your hands?
Oh, yeah.
And balls and everything.
It's getting kind of weird, man.
Oh, Cardini. It's like Cardini's. There's another one.
Yeah.
Well, this drifted off of it.
Yeah. So you've been enjoying the last couple days?
It is fantastic. I recommend it to any teen magician. You must. I don't care what your parents say. You come out here. You drag your parents out here. You say, this is the guy with the masks. This is the guy with the doves.
Yeah.
And these are my heroes. And your parents will be like, man, my kid is doing research. My kid actually has a life beyond me.
Yeah.
And so it's a learning experience for your magic and yourself.
Well, I'm wondering how it's going to work out next year with the combined convention, the IBM and SAM convention, because I understand the IBM has kind of taken over where the World Magic Summit had left off with the youth doing that in future years. But next year it'll be combined, and the SYM is a big organization too.
I would love to see them just like merge together and see how they come up with their own sessioning. It might be combined into like 4 days.
Yeah.
So what I'm hoping, maybe because I'm getting older. I'm 17 now, and I'm almost, once I'm 19, I'm out of this.
Yeah.
And so
17 for SYM.
Right. And so hopefully when I'm older, there has to be like some way, right, that we can have just a teen convention.
Yeah.
Just without bunch of kids running around rampantly.
Sure, I understand. Yeah, teen
convention.
Hotel. Part of the issue with that, it seems like if they've had that before. The WoW convention, I think it was.
Weekend of Wonder. Yep.
SAM sponsored that. Yep. How did that go? Had you attended that?
I never attended it, but I did hear about it and read about it and stuff. And it was like a 2 or 3 day convention. All for kids. It was basically like the Lance Burton seminar, except longer.
Yeah.
And
see, the advantage of having this in conjunction with the IBM, or a larger convention, basically have the parents, you know, something for them to do and something, you know, for the youth to do then as well.
Right.
So having, again, a convention within a convention type of a thing.
Yeah.
So that way that I would think that it would have an increase in attendance of youth because the parents are coming and have something for them to do, as opposed to just the WoW convention where, you know, there's really not too much for the parents to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
But I hope that does evolve. And I was going to ask you, Eli, also, you had work.
Have it at a casino, and your parents can be at the slot machine.
There you go.
You'll be upstairs.
That's
learning
a good idea.
Magic.
Sure. Which they could do even here, I guess, you know, because they have Indian casinos here in Phoenix. So you were an intern at the Magic Live convention. Tell me what you did, how you got involved with that and everything as a youth. Was that always just for youth as interns, I assume?
Yes, yes. You can only intern once, and it is up there with one of the best. It's right up there with the seminar, and it's you learn behind the scenes.
Right.
What goes on behind the scenes, the work that goes into a convention. If you just sit around a convention and you just do that, but when you're actually working a convention, Stan Allen, yeah. He said, I have never been to a Magic Live convention, because he works it every single time.
Right.
And he does a fantastic job. I mean, you need somebody like that. And to be a part of that is such an honor, because you really appreciate it so much more.
Mm-hmm.
So much. I mean.
And how many people actually are interns each year? Half dozen?
Started out small, and it just grew.
Seeing larger? And how does one go about, or how did you get on with that?
I made my mom do it. Sign me up, Ma.
He was looking for interns, and she signed you up.
Yeah, if you come to Magic Live, if you're a teen, ask Stan about it.
And it could be something for you to do.
Yeah, but you have to be 16. Mm-hmm. 16 or 15. I don't know about 13. I think that might still be a little young.
Yeah.
But it's great. You learn behind the scenes what goes into it. And Stan just works your ass off.
Now, I've seen you perform, and I know that you like stage magic and do a lot of stage magic. But
I love
ask,
it.
Chase, what is your favorite kind of magic?
Stage magic.
Oh, as well?
Yep.
Okay, like to music? I mean, type stuff?
Yeah, manipulation to music. I actually start with a 7-minute routine, then I kind of go into a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, you do? So,
yep.
Okay. Louis, how about you? What do you like?
Close up.
Really? Cards, coins? What kind of stuff? Anything? Everything?
Yeah, everything.
Kind of a street magic kind of stuff? Or what type of... Who is your...
Street magic is... Yeah.
Who do you like? Who do you follow? I mean, like Eric Jones kind of stuff? Or
yeah. Just
I'm not
really
trying to put people's names into your mouth, but, like, for an example, you know, who are your inspirations? I'm going to ask you guys that question, too, your next inspirations.
I don't really have any. I just kind of watch my dad, and then he shows me.
Ah, okay. That's good. Eli?
My inspiration, well, first, I didn't want to be a magician. I wanted to be my father.
Yeah.
I grew up watching him at the age of like 2 years old. That's when the magic bug hit me. I didn't do magic at the time.
It's just a natural thing. It that's what you're supposed to do.
Like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And if your dad's like a construction worker or police officer, maybe it's kind of like that inspiration like happened to me with my father. And then later on, I do my first show do my first show, and I thought to myself, because I didn't know why I wanted to do this, because I was so young, I didn't remember. And then I had to think to myself, why? And then I remember the stories my parents used to tell me. They're like, you used to mimic your father to just like him. I'm like, and it hit me. I'm like, oh my gosh, my father is my biggest inspiration. At first, I thought it was like Lance Burden and Jeff McBride, and then I'm like, no, he's living with me in my house. And when that hit me, my life changed. I'm like, when I see my dad perform, it's like that's my inspiration.
Pretty cool. That's nice. That's a good story. Chase?
For me, it would be any working magician that has made a living doing a great stage show. So I look up to David Copperfield. I look up to, I mean, everybody says that, but David Copperfield, Lance Burton, Matt King, all the working pros in Vegas that are doing stage shows.
Right. Okay, last question, because the name of the podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question is, what is your magic word? Not necessarily like abracadabra, but I mean, you know, what is, at your young age, would be your mantra, something that is a goal, a slogan, a life dream, I mean, or something that you live by. What is that?
Simplicity is key.
Simplicity.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Keep things simple.
K-I-S-S, yeah. Yep.
Save the world one magic trick at a time.
Like that?
Exactly what Chase said. Simple is the best.
Simplicity. You guys are awesome. Appreciate talking to the future of magic, you guys right here. Thanks, Chase. Thanks, Eli. Thanks, Louie. So for now, Scotty out. Well, we're still on the first day of the convention here in Phoenix, Arizona, and I am standing here now with the, I guess, the second vice president, or first vice president, Mr. Sean Farquhar.
Hi, Scott.
So, yeah. First vice president.
International first vice president.
Moved your way up from second to first, and so that means next year that you're going to be...
I'll be, at the end of this convention, I should be the president-elect.
So they will, the president-elect, yes. And so then you will be inaugurated in next year.
Yep, at the combined convention in St. Louis, I'll come in as the president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians.
Yeah, for a while, you were the talent chairman for the...
I am currently the talent chairman.
For the combined convention?
For the combined convention I was, but I'm the talent chairman for the national. Mike Miller took over for that one.
Right. So you're talent chairman then for the following year. Is that what you mean?
Like I'm current for right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm the talent chairman for last year and this year, and I was going to be for the combined, but some things happened, so I moved on from that.
Right.
And now we'll have a new talent chairman. I'll come in as convention chairman at the end of this convention, which means I'll be finding my replacement for Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And putting together the convention committee, and who will be in charge of it for 2015, 2016, and into, hopefully, we just voted today to have our 2017 combined IBM SAM again in Louisville, Kentucky.
In Louisville, okay.
There's a little snack for you there. Ooh, scoop right there.
Yes, and we were talking last evening about the next convention is going to be coming up after St. Louis will be Jacksonville, and then we're going to
San Antonio, Texas.
Yeah, down just a few miles from my place.
Some building there we're supposed to remember, but I'm Canadian, so I'm not sure what that is.
You can't remember that.
It's like a car rental place. Is that right?
It Hertz.
Oh, Hertz? That's awesome.
Yeah, we're
remember
number two.
The Hertz.
We're number two.
That's awesome. Actually, I'm fascinated. I love San Antonio. Yeah. I went there three times. The Riverwalk's amazing, and the hotel we're going to be at is Grand Hyatt right on the Riverwalk, so it's going to be phenomenal. A brand new Grand Hyatt. It's going to be spectacular.
Is there a building there?
Yeah.
To San Antonio fairly regular, but I didn't know they had. And that's going to be on the Riverwalk.
Right? Yeah,
awesome. Because the Marriott, I know, is where they've held a lot of conventions in the past down there. It's a great convention city, certainly.
We seem to be having a really good time with Hyatts recently. This is a Hyatt. Next year is a Hyatt, and the Hyatt chain seems to like us, and we seem to like them. So together, it's a really good combination.
Yep. Now, I heard you saying a while ago that you're going to try and hit like every convention after you're going to be the president.
When president, I really want to give the face of IBM to the world. It's nice to be coming in as a professional magician who's, you know, the president, and then hopefully the next year or the next few years will be, you know, professionals actually becoming presidents of the IBM. And so in my year, I've decided that I'm going to lecture and perform at any event that's an IBM event. So IBM conventions, IBM rings, at lecture and perform for free for all those as my way of being exposed to the IBM. As long as it all fits into a schedule, I'll be going to all those things. And in between ones that aren't, I still want to go and put up the face of the IBM and show them that the IBM is, you know, the world's biggest, greatest magic organization out there.
Well, certainly, you know, that you have the notoriety, you know, that some of the other past presidents, international presidents, have not necessarily had until they've had their year. But, I mean, up until this point, that they actually, you have been around the world, and you travel, and you've done a lot, so that way that you have that name recognition.
Each one of the presidents bring their own certain something that's perfect to the table.
There's no question about that.
Mine is hopefully visibility to the organization.
Yeah, some have some organizational skills or, you know, law or accounting or whatever it happens to be, that you have a great personality and notoriety and everything, you know, so that's going to be a good face. So with that, I think that that's important for guys who are listening to this then right now to remember, keep that in mind if they're looking for a free lecture to come through.
That's,
you know,
good
or
time.
You're going to be having a banquet.
One.
You can help, you know, do the introduction and installation of officers.
Come in and do all that sort of stuff and be entertaining while doing
that's
it,
right,
which I think will be really fun.
So you're not going to be jumping on a cruise ship and
I'm going to try really hard. Well, I'll be jumping in and off of them, but I've made a contractual deal with three cruise lines that understand what my position will be for the year. And they all seem very good about it.
Kind of taking
really
a year off sabbatical from work, kind of thing.
Jumping on and off.
So
I work for Disney Cruise Lines now, and my maximum contracts are usually 4 days at a time.
Okay.
And so it's perfect. I fly on, I do my shows, and I get right off right away.
Right.
And that would really afford me enough time to jump back and forth, get on, do events, get back off, and continue in that. And Royal Caribbean, Holland America, Norwegian Cruise Lines have all expressed great interest in short periods, allowing me the opportunity to really put something into the magic community for one more year.
That's very cool. Now, what is going to be your mantra? What are you going to be hoping to bring to the table? I mean, I've heard others saying, you know, share the magic or, you know, whatever. Have you kind of thought about what you want to accomplish?
What I want to accomplish in my year is youth. Our organization, like almost every major fraternal organization in North America, is dwindling because we have older people. Mm-hmm. Almost 50% of our membership are Order of Merlin now, which means, you know, most have been in 25 years or longer. And there are so many young people that can benefit so much from the knowledge that these people have. And for some reason, young people don't seem to be coming to the clubs. And that they go online where they learn incorrectly or they learn partially. And I think that we really owe it to them to know that there's this fraternity and it's a wonderful place and a bond for life. I have lifelong friends and connections to people. Heck, today, because of the IBM, I got to spend a day hanging out with Lance Burton. Come on.
Yeah.
How many people,
yeah.
you know? I remember back in the days, the Lee Grables, and the people that the young people won't even know, but they befriended me and talked to me because I was part of the IBM.
Right.
I wouldn't have done it if I was just some kid who said, I do magic. And so I'm really hoping that I can bring more youth to the IBM, having, you know, our new updated website, better access. Now the linking ring has gone to a mobile app. You can get it on your phone. You can get it on your iPad.
That's
you
cool.
can, all these things. And I want to keep it going. I want to make it even better. I want it to be more open, more visible, and I want the young people to really have a connection. The new teen seminar coming here now that Lance Burton is sponsoring this, and that we had this year, kids from Thailand, China, Africa, the United States, England, and Canada, all in a room for free for 3 days, learning from Jeff McBride and Larry Haas, Bryce Kuhlman, Oscar Munoz, Eugene Berger. I mean, I was humbled in a room standing there teaching my little three-fly routine and watching Lance Burton in the back with three poker chips going right along with me going, this is the greatest. And the kids going, can I show you how I do this? I'm like, yes. It's an amazing experience. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I want her to know. I truly believe that those kids in that room are the future of the art I love.
Right.
I truly love this.
And I thought that Jeff McBride made a good comment there, the panel discussion there last evening, in which he was saying that kind of look around you, because the kids that you're seeing then right now are going to be your lifelong friends, you know, particularly competitors.
I just walked up to a registrant a few minutes ago, and Aaron smiled at me and said, do you remember me? And I went, 1991, at the SAM convention in Las Vegas, we competed, and on the stage was Ice McDonald, Cyril Takayama, and I went through the list of every one of the competitors, and he said, I could have done that too. I said, and we've all known each other. I hadn't seen him in almost 14 years. I looked there and said, it's been 14 years since I've seen you face to face. I said, but I still remember that day and the bond that we made and the friendship that we kept for years after that.
That's funny because I was talking to Lance Burton about that very thing then last evening, because I said that we were talking about, you know, a youth cocktail now, and that he had reminded him of, we had this discussion with the youth. I did a phone call with him in 2000 when I was president of TAOM, and that Howard Hale was the one kind of moderated, you know, and was asking the question. He said, you know, Howard and I, you know, good friends. He said, because he and I were in the same, you know, contest. He started talking about, you know, the gold medal contest you know, years ago. It's like, exactly, you know, the people just, you do not forget.
They're a bond for life. They're youth that have the same fears, goals, aspirations, and dreams. They're the same.
Sure.
And for
where else can you go? I mean, it's such a tight-knit fraternity, you know, that we have. There are so few other people outside of our craft that we can really associate with. And when you find someone like you and I, you know, bond with each other, that it's hard to explain. It's, you know, a band of brothers, I guess, would be the closest thing.
I can't imagine a group of plumbers getting together to hang out, have a beer, and show each other how they screw pipes together.
That's right.
Or even that a plumber travels to Germany and looks for another plumber in the Yellow Pages to say, hey, can I see you? It doesn't happen.
No.
It's only, not even musicians do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not something that musicians may admire one and go to look at them and be humbled by them, but they don't go and look in the phone book and say, hey, I play the guitar.
Well, how many times have we done that before the internet? You know, every time I was in a town, that's the first thing I do, and I check into a room with the Yellow Pages, I call up, you know, everybody that I, it's like, hey, I'm just, you don't know me and I don't know you, but.
I think the greatest invention of all times is Facebook, because I go on that and I type, I'm going to be in, and they come out of the woodworks, and it's the greatest experience to see people.
Literally, I had someone who was a youth, a young man, who'd come up, and he said, hey, we're Facebook friends, and I just wanted to put the face together, and I said, wow, thank you very much. And he was in the youth thing
awesome.
With you guys. It's like, this is, really great. And so,
this has been such a learning experience the last 5 years, getting onto the board of the IBM and watching how it grows and how they're reinventing themselves and trying to develop youth. They have so many youth program ideas that they don't share with everybody else. Like this year alone, the EDF, which is the endowment fund, they paid for two young people from the youth program to go to Sorcerer Safari Magic Camp in Canada. Full scholarships for two kids to go. Jeff McBride is putting forward a faculty award for one of the kids to take a mystery magic class. I mean, this is, they do so much, and they don't ask for applause for it. They don't even brag about it.
Sure.
And it's like, I see other, you know, hey, we're doing this, and I'm like, we have to do something like that to let them all know that it's out there.
Much else is going on around the world, of course, with the internet, and people that are watching YouTube or, you know, just on Facebook, as you said, and whatever else, but they're really not attending the conventions. They're not getting out and being social.
But they're missing, the key part, because they don't come to an event like this. There is no entertainment value in the presentations that they make, because all they learn is the technical and sometimes incorrectly.
That's right.
And then...
Well, you think there's only one way because you keep watching the same video.
Same video over and over. Then you get to a convention and you see 12 people sitting around on the floor at a convention and they're all doing the same effect differently, and they're showing you presentational styles and stories that go with it or where the moment of misdirection can be created without hiding it. And it's like, I had a young man come up and he says, I've been doing this trick for a long time, you know, and everybody catches me on YouTube. I said, of course they're going to catch you on YouTube. There's no misdirection on YouTube.
That's right.
Do it for a real human being. And I walked him over. We were in this little Coney Island hot dog place yesterday. I said, go do it here. And I saw where the mistake was. I said, no, ask him to use his left hand to cover it. He goes, why? I said, because that means he crosses his body, which blocks your arm, and you can do your mercury switch.
Moment.
And he was like, oh, that's so perfect. I said, yes, but, and he was like, came up to me today, said, I've done it 4 times, and it's awesome. I said,
I'm so happy. Yeah,
that
somebody.
He came here.
Yeah.
He'd have spent a lifetime doing it, you know, on YouTube, and no one would have ever helped him.
No, well, they might make some comment or whatever.
And it will probably be a bad comment,
exactly.
You know, attacking or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Facebook, one of the grandest things. It keeps in touch. I have a friend, David Oliver, who just recently had a miracle, you know, as you
double
know.
Double lung transplant.
Double lung transplant. And the love through that is unbelievable.
Praying the best for him.
Yeah, it's awesome. We made a little video presentation we're going to show today.
Oh, good.
That's on David. And
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Now, are you selling the bands here?
Okay. Have them going away to pick them up. I've got one on. Okay. I own 20 of them. Is that wrong?
I sent away, but they haven't sent one to me yet.
Well, they just had to order another 1,000.
Oh, okay.
Band had run out. And
okay.
So that's what we're doing with this video, is sending them all to the website to make the donation, and they'll mail them all to them because they don't have any to sell at the moment. In fact, I took the 20, I had 40 of them, and I sold 20 of them to other people and then sent those funds in going, here's more money because I didn't need them. And it was like, David's such a cool guy. He really is and does so much for Magic and so youth-oriented. Unbelievable.
Absolutely, yeah. And I wholeheartedly agree with you, you know, that without the youth, that, you know, this art and craft will kind of die with this generation. Because, and you're kind of seeing a lot of conventions that have been falling in attendance. However, that I am so invigorated by seeing how many youth are here
and the
involvement that they've got. And I think that the help that Lance has given us, you know, has given a...
speaks volumes.
It does,
it
right
truly
there.
Does.
Sure.
Just all the people that have supported the youth and to see them running around. Last year in Norfolk, an elevator door opened and some of the youth had taken and dragged a banquet table into the elevator and were presenting close-up shows to people going up and down the elevator.
Is that the funniest thing? That's a cool idea.
I said, you're going to get in trouble for this. And they said, actually, no, the hotel manager got in, watched, and said it was okay. I was like, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Creative kids having a great time.
Sure.
I have, from my local ring, four have come here. And my president
from
is
Vancouver.
From Vancouver. At ring number 92, Alexander Seaman is like just turned 21. He's been our president for quite some time now. And he's like walking around going, this is the greatest thing ever. Billy has just turned 19. We've got Leo Katzenberg. He's, I think, 15, might be 15. We've got Sandra McNeil. Oh, my, we have a lot from, I never thought about it. I was going, well, that's a lot of lots of kids. We don't even have, in my ring, a youth program. We just made them the centerpiece of our membership, that all of us are working for them now because we realize that we're on that slide on the other side.
Right.
And so now it's time to bring them up to the top.
That's what we had done a couple of years ago, you know, that we had decided that Danny Garcia in Houston should be the president of the Texas Association of Magicians. You know, he's a young guy.
Great,
has a lot
visible.
Of cred, exactly. And we had a very successful convention. A lot of people came. You know, we need to have that kind of youth and vitality and people who are interested enough to try to do something, you know, and bring it on.
People that say to me, Sean, you're a professional magician. Why are you doing this? And I said, excuse me, I'm a professional magician. That's why
because,
I'm doing this.
Yes.
And they don't get it at first, and it's like,
I'm
put
giving
it together.
Back.
Yeah, you know, I took a lot from this for a very long time. It's nice to give back. And you don't give back when you're 85. You give back when you get an opportunity to do it right.
I was talking with someone here recently about Lance Burton. You remember the TV show Black's Magic?
Hal
Linden.
Hal Linden. And I worked with Hal Linden on a television series called Jack's Place right after that.
I remember Jack's Place.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you do on that show?
Magic Technical Advisor.
Oh,
they had a whole bunch of magicians on it for several episodes.
Huh. Well, it's just that I recall that, you know, in his name, Black, was a retired professional magician who was very successful, you know, like Lance Burton or David Copperfield or somebody. But then he started lending his talents to charities and different things would happen. He'd have to solve a crime or whatever.
Sure.
And I can see Lance Burton a lot like that, in which that, you know, he's, what does he really need? I mean, he's got everything.
He has everything.
You know,
that he takes of his time to come here
but
and do this.
But he's willing to give back
so
rather than
great.
Just kind of staying home and counting his money, you know.
I contacted last year Greg Fruin. You know, here's a guy who's got his own theater with tigers and everything. And I said, I don't need you to come because I know your schedule's busy, but I just want you to make a recording. And he said, what of? And I said, of your experience at the Gold Medal, and we're going to play it at the start. And so at the start of the Gold Medal show last year, it said, hi, this is Greg Fruin. In 1980, I was standing backstage in a theater very much like this in Quebec City, thinking that if I won this, one day my dreams would come true. Maybe I could perform in Asia, have my own television series, and maybe one day have my own theater. And I was and he did it. And we played it, and the place just, you know, screamed and cheered.
Yeah.
And I said, how cool would it be if this year we could have a guy like, oh, I don't know, Lance Burton walk out on the stage and say, howdy. Many years ago, I started here, and this launched a career that got me a $100 million contract.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he's such a nice guy. He's like,
Oscar
like
said he did that. You know, he walked in and talked with the contestants and said, hey, just calm down.
Yeah,
you
relax.
Know,
this, remember, the people in this room will be your friend one day.
That's right.
That you're not competing against them. You're competing against yourself to do the best. Oh, man, can you imagine being one of those kids in the room?
Exactly. Getting that kind of encouragement and everything.
Yeah.
Sure.
Unbelievable.
Yes. So the long-term goal, but the outlook, I guess, of the IBM looks healthy?
Healthy and happy. We're doing really good. You know,
and
conventions are down at the most, but we're making changes and
developing. Like you said, the website's going to be, has it been released, by the way?
It'll be open in August.
In August,
The new website will pop up in August.
Okay.
A whole new look, whole new feel. More flashy and fun.
Good.
The new app is out.
Which is magician.org, by the way.
Magician.org.
Okay, yeah. Now what about where do you get the app?
The app, you can go to the App Store and get it. The Linking Ring app.
The Linking Ring.
Yeah.
Just type that in.
Ring.
Okay, and that does what?
It actually gives you the magazine. If you remember, you put in your username and your
membership number,
and one more tap, and you pick the magazine of your choice and read it right on your phone.
Wow. And then
How cool is that?
Read it and just...
Yeah, search it and everything, just like
PDF
everything else.
Or whatever?
It's not a PDF, though. It's a searchable through the app. We have a PDF. We also have a different version of it that you can, you know, flip pages mm-hmm. and that sort of stuff. And then we have, of course, the hard copy that people mm-hmm. get, and now we have the mobile app.
And I understand that, for right now, at least, it only goes back about 3 years, to 2010 or something?
I think it's 4 years. It might be three. Three or 4 years. Okay. Yeah. But a lot more. You know, Linking Ring has such a history.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
But that's AskAlexander.com.
Yeah.
There's a plug for those guys, because they're awesome. Yeah. I tell you, I just created a new trick I did 2 days ago on ABC on the news, and it was a book test, and I wanted to see if there was any history whatsoever, and in 30 minutes on AskAlexander.com, I found the closest variation, wrote that person for permission, and they wrote back and said, oh, it's awesome that you found it in the magazine.
Yeah.
How did you find it? I said, well, I didn't really go through a lot to find it.
Yeah, thanks to Bill Kalush and his guys.
Bless his heart. It was type in comedy and the word book test, and hey, go ahead, you'll find a great new performance idea. It was really good. Yeah, but there's just such a wealth in those Linking Ring magazines. I tell all the young people in our club, I said, if you can get 1 year's worth of Linking Rings, you can build a show just off their the parades alone. Mm-hmm. You can build a show that you could work. Mm-hmm. You really could. Close up stage, parlor, you name it.
It's all there.
Yeah, it's all in there. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yep. Well, I had one man parade in there one time. It was all MC ideas.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I think literally whatever you're looking for. You say comedy stage, you know, close
it's
up or just coins or what? Yeah.
Truly
anything
is.
At all.
Well, Sean, look around this room.
Yeah.
The future's bright.
It
We've
is.
Got people from, we have competitors from Russia, Japan, Germany, Thailand. We've got them from everywhere. It truly is the International Brotherhood of Magicians.
I'm a stage judge, and I was watching this today, and I have to say that this is the highest level of competition on stage that I have ever seen. This is just day one.
So day one, we have 2 days, 23 competitors.
Yes, right.
Unbelievably
good. It's going to be hard to sort out.
It's
going to be very good. I'm very excited. So I got goosebumps. It's not just the air conditioning.
No.
This is good.
It really is.
It's just stand next to you, get me excited.
And
Sean,
we picked a great time. 2 years ago, they listened. The convention coordinators here are so good. 2 years ago, I said, look, I've been a competitor for years, and the cruelest thing you can do is make them compete in the morning. It's the worst mm-hmm. experience of your life.
Right.
I said I was always up at 5 o'clock in the morning, standing backstage at 7, and at 8 o'clock I'm on. And they moved it to an afternoon event, and instead of there being a shell of people, you know, 20 or 30 people clapping, mm-hmm. that theater had 400 people jammed in there screaming and cheering, having a great time, and enjoying real magic. And I was like, I walk in every year now. Last year, Norfolk was the first year we put in the afternoon, and mm-hmm. this year, and the close-up. Instead of having, you know, for some reason, some people think close-up should be done with a television screen and big monitors, and it's like it kills me now because I do it in theaters that way.
Yeah.
But I use professional cameramen with, you know, with white balance and beautiful screens and special lighting, and we rehearse. It's not the same when a poor guy, his entire life is based on the cameraman not being misdirected in the wrong moment.
Just some guy who happened to be standing there that is like, you want to be the cameraman?
Exactly. So here, I had one fellow guy from Norway who's complaining. He goes, I have to do the act three times. I said, yeah, but you're going to do it the small little rooms. Oh, I'm good with that.
I said,
it's close-up. There won't be, you know, wide angles. The people are in front of you, and you really get to do close-up. And he's like, oh, that's such a good feeling. And the look on his face was just elation.
Don't mind doing it over when you're going to be...
I do it. I remember when I did it in Orlando, and there were, I think, 5 rooms. And my first room, I was nervous. By the second room, I was on. Third room, I was just on fire.
Yeah.
Standing ovations, room after room after room.
Yeah.
I got this down now, because you got the shakes out in the first one.
Sure.
The first one is always going to be just a little bit, you know, worse than the rest, because you're just sort of getting into the flow. By the third one, it's rote. You're like,
this
is like I'm rehearsing now, but there's a real audience. And the audiences at IBM are so encouraging. There was a young little boy from Thailand today doing his manipulation in the wads. And boy, he had a lot of pizzazz, didn't he?
He had charisma.
Charisma, mm-hmm. he's got it locked in. And everybody cheering for him.
Sure,
I'm thinking, this is a memory he'll have for the rest of his life.
Yeah, the kind of response these guys are getting already, you know, and if they get to be advanced to be in the Gold Cup competition
on
stage.
Can you imagine the theater, the Orpheum?
That's right, yeah. But, yeah, those, I can't say anything because I'm a judge, but, boy,
it's
they're good.
Great to see. Some phenomenal acts.
Yeah,
it really is.
They are.
And from everywhere.
Yeah.
I like to see that.
Well, Sean, thank you very much.
My pleasure,
I'm
Scott.
I'm going to be wishing
always
you some luck. We'll be seeing you then again.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, buddy.
Keep
it up. Stay for now.
You bet. Scotty out.
Bye.
And so now as we continue kind of walking around the showroom floor, the convention floor, I happened upon a longtime friend I haven't seen in a while, Peter Samuelson. Hey, Peter, hey, how are you?
Great, absolutely great.
Good to see you, and you're going to be on tonight. No, there's not a show tonight. Is it Thursday night?
I'm actually on the Gala show, on Saturday night.
And Todd's going to be the MC.
I believe so,
And
yes.
You and Todd have been buds for just a very long time.
Well, we've been co-producing Monday Night Magic back in New York, myself and Jamie Ian Swiss and Todd.
Michael Child,
exactly, and Frank Brentz while he was still alive.
That's right.
One of the co-producers on
You know,
too.
I thought, speaking of Frank Brentz, seeing those old videos, you know, even black and white, you know, and it was the same act with the duck and everything. I mean, you could, you know, this, and then he went to the color video and everything, but it was the very same moves and
exactly.
Block. Exactly. He had it down.
Oh,
such
his
a
stuff
great,
was wonderful.
Great act.
I mean, you know, and he, up until he died, he was still working on stuff.
Was he really?
Oh, absolutely.
Was he 70?
He was in his, late 70s, I believe, at this point,
What a guy.
He was really.
Yes. And so Monday Night Magic has been going now for...
We're in our 17th... 20? Or 17 years
17
now.
Years.
Yeah,
okay.
97 is when we started. So mm-hmm. We just began our 17th year as of June 21st.
The last time I was there, of course, you were still playing at where the Fantastics were at Sullivan Street Theater. And they've moved like twice since then. So they're now
more than that. More than six times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were almost in four different theaters last year alone.
Oh.
It was last year was very sort of disruptive for all of us.
Is it hard, obviously, to find a venue?
Well, you know, it's hard to find the right venue, you know, because some of them are theater places, and they always say, oh, well, is it theater? Well, it's magic. Well, is that theater? And so then you find places
you have to convince them,
like the Players Theater, which is where we are
now. Well, once they see your show, then they should know it.
They should know it, shouldn't they?
Exactly. You have one of the best acts, I think.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks. You know, well, so Todd was in this theater, the Players Theater, when he was doing Play Dead, which is the show that he and Teller are now working on. They're going to be at the Geffen. So we actually moved back into that theater last year and are loving being in there. So we're back down in the Village, just a couple blocks away from where we were when you saw us there back in the Sullivan Street Theater.
Is Todd still living in the Village, by the way?
He's actually up on 46th Street.
Oh, he moved, okay.
Yeah.
Yep, I visited his flat, you know, way back when.
Exactly.
You know, and what is his son's name, by the way?
Phineas,
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. He's got to be, what, two now?
Oh, he's more like six now.
Is he? Okay, boy, time
five. I guess he just had his fifth birthday, so.
Okay, because I keep a picture on my camera that he had on Facebook, like had a cigar in his mouth or something.
It was it's just an amazing. Oh, he's just an amazing kid. He's been on TV now, you know. He's
really?
He's on, I think it was Days of Our Lives. They're doing their sort of doing this for broadcast on the web based, and it's and he had a part on that. I don't know if he's in a recurring role, but I think he is. So that's
funny.
Great.
Yeah. So we may see him in the big screen then sometime in the future as well.
Yeah. Oh, you will.
Now, did you have anything to do, by the way, with Play Ted as far as the movie version?
I did not.
Okay.
I had nothing to do with that, unfortunately.
Okay.
I wish I had, but I think I'm just a huge fan of it. So,
I never got to see the play, so I'm anxious to see the movie tomorrow night.
The movie, and, you know, as I mentioned, they're remounting it at the Geffen out in California, I think in October of this year. So it'll be out there, which is great as well.
Are they looking for a national distributor so that way they can get the wider
distribution? I'm sure they are. I would think so, there's lots that'll be happening with that. So.
I was just talking to Lance Burton last evening, and he was saying that he and Johnny are working on a movie, and they're, I guess, in the final phases of completing it. I said, so have you got a nationwide distributor? He said, one thing at a time. Let's finish the movie, then we'll look for a distributor.
And speaking of Lance, you know, Frank and Lance were so really, really close, as a matter of
fact. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Frank was instrumental in Lance's early work and stuff. And as a matter of fact, at one of the shows, when Frank actually came to Las Vegas and was in the show, Lance stopped the show and introduced Frank, had him stand up, and gave him a great, you know, and said, this is the man who influenced me so much as a youth. And
he's
just really, it's Mr. Frank Brentz.
There was a Frito magician, was the guy, I can't remember his name offhand, that was a real inspiration to Lance. But I had heard about Frank, now that you mentioned that, you know, from way back when.
Absolutely.
And so you're going to be in the Saturday Night Show.
I'm doing close-up. I'm doing the close-up presentations. I'm doing a lecture. So I'm doing the lecture that I've been doing, which is Small Changes Make Big Difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing one of the six-pack sessions on theatrical magic.
Looking forward to
bringing
that.
Bringing theater and magic together.
Right. And then six-pack. I think we get a choice, like of two or something.
Two out of the six, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I want to choose
you.
Yours.
Exactly. Oh, well, please do.
I do.
Glad to have you there.
I mean, it's a tough decision. There's some other good things to see, you know, during then as well. And do you... what are you going to be doing? Is it a silent act that you're going to be doing on the Saturday Night Show?
So, no, actually, I'm going to be doing a talking act, but I'm doing about 13 minutes, so I'm doing the greatest hits. So I'll be doing
Gypsy Thread.
I'll be doing Gypsy Thread, and I'll be doing the Umbrella piece, which was actually one of Jay Marshall's favorites.
He
was really complimentary about that.
Okay.
So Lady Fair, and then I'll do The Snow as well.
The Snow, yeah, so strong.
Exactly.
Yeah. That sounds like that's going to be just a great show.
And during the close-up show, I'll actually be doing the smoke. That's the idea, which has many people haven't seen. So,
I have.
Yeah,
I love that. That's why you're one of my favorite. I just think that is just such a great routine.
Really thrilled because when I first started working out of the castle, that was one of the pieces I did, and Vernon would come in and just sit and watch it, and he would just came back again and again. It was just such a thrill to me.
Isn't that an experience? You know, Vernon came in to see, when I first worked the castle, it was in the early 80s, and he came in to see me on Monday night, and I thought, well, you know, worst night in the close-up room, you know, it's like, and there's Vernon sitting there. But he liked it, and he came in three times, and he kept telling people, I gotta see this kid in there, you know.
Exactly.
And then I was sitting in the bar, and he got up in his chair, came over and sat down by me. I mean, it's just, he's such a caring guy, you know.
And, and such enthusiasm. I mean,
oh,
really
my gosh,
was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's he loved magic, you know, certainly. And did you get to spend very much time with the professor at all?
You know, I didn't get a chance to because I was East Coast.
I was going to say, well, really, how about Slidini then?
Slidini,
I guess.
Yes, okay, absolutely. I never studied with him, but I studied him.
Yes.
So the difference is there. You know, I mean, I always thought a lot about his work, and I spent a lot of time looking at him and watching him. And he, you know, I was one of the resident magicians at the Magic Townhouse, which was 3rd Avenue, 61st Street.
That wasn't Imam's place, was it?
No, it was the place with Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich. It was their place that was there. Mm-hmm. Wesley James and a guy named Al Cooper and I were the resident magicians early on. And Tony Slidini came in and was really great because he would come in and he'd perform and we could talk. And so it was a great opportunity to see him. Matter of fact, that was where I first met Penn and Teller. So way back when they were part of Asparagus Valley.
Wow, that was before they moved out because they went to Los Angeles, and that's when they worked at the LA Theater.
It was even before that. It was before they moved to San Francisco, before they did the show in New York.
That's when they still had three guys.
Yeah,
they juggled.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Is that right?
Eric Christopher. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that, the Asparagus what?
Asparagus Valley Cultural Society.
Yeah. And they, didn't they work Renaissance festivals or something kind of?
And the stories are crazy from back then. You should just get Teller to talk to you about that sometime.
I would love to sit down. You know if possibly he's going to make a show with Todd tomorrow? I wonder if this might have a surprise tomorrow.
I have no idea.
Yeah, even if you know, don't tell me.
I won't.
So how's Michael Chowton and everybody
doing
out there?
He's doing good, yeah. So he sends his best. He's holding down the fort down back in New York because we have to have somebody there looking after things while we're all out here having fun.
And is Jamie and Swiss traveling a lot in
he's been doing lots and lots of stuff. He was just in Las Vegas for the TA for the TAM for the amazing meeting with Randy. And he was just looked on Facebook and he was posting a picture of him and Dexter out on the beach. So so they were you know he and the kids are apparently out there. He's doing so great. As you know, he's basically parenting.
Yes.
Anyways, it's great. It's created this whole new persona.
I was about to say, has it really changed his personality a lot?
You know, it's brought out a part of him. He's been able to do something. He's always been very caring and nurturing throughout his entire life. It's one of the things of his great passions. He loves to cook, he loves to care, and he cares for people, and is really very concerned with making a home. And this is really wonderful because now he has kids, and he would be a great dad, and he is a great dad.
Yeah, yeah. But he just kind of had that subdued, I guess, until it was brought out when he had the opportunity. And
exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
So
it's a great thing.
Yeah. Well, great. Peter, let me ask you,
sure.
Since the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word.
Yes.
What is your magic word?
Ooh.
I don't mean like abracadabra, but something that you might use. I mean, it's your mantra, something that is your passion,
great.
You know, a slogan, words you live by.
Wow.
It could be a slogan, a phrase, word.
Think.
I love that.
I actually use three words. It's who, what, and why. Those are the three words. Those are the three questions I always use to approach a piece of work.
So your creative, or I should say, approach to creating things is who, what, and why.
Yeah, it's really, it's the core essence. Those three words are the most important words for me. And I include that in the lecture, and I explain why I use those and what those are about and how they lead you places. So they're tools.
Looking forward to hearing the lecture then. Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter, very much.
Pleasure.
As Peter Samuelson, Scott Welch for The Magic Word. This is Scotty out. All right, well, still on the convention floor, so much to see, so many friends to talk with, and right now we're here then with Joe Turner. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Doing great, Scott. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you very much. And you have been the lecture chairman? Or, I mean, you've been introducing and doing the MC?
No, I'm really the hotel liaison for this convention.
Oh, you are?
I'm kind of helping with room hosting and that sort of thing. I don't even remember what year this is on the convention committee, but... I'm kind of the general fill-in-the-gap guy, I think.
I was going to say, you haven't been the hotel. You kind of do whatever they put.
Well, I was registration chairman 1 year.
That's a hard one.
And
you wouldn't do that
Bob Patterson is doing a great job with that, so he should do that. And so Bill and Mike have asked me to do some other behind-the-scenes things with the hotel and just interface with them and make sure the rooms are set properly and get things that are need to solve, put out fires. Mm-hmm. Solve problems and put out fires.
And it looks like everything's running smoothly. And that's the thing about putting out fires. You know, no one sees the ripple in the water, you know.
Well, you try to do it so nobody notices.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that, you know, from time to time there's room changes or whatever, you know, last-minute little tweaks that you have to make.
Right. Well, that's just the nature of running any kind of gathering or event.
Yeah,
yeah, any convention has those things that come up.
Well, now, you do a lot of conventions. Aside from magic, let me say magic conventions, and your specialty really is in giving speeches and going to conventions and seminars and conferences. Would you say it's kind of a forte of yours?
Right. I mean, my business has really turned into this two-pronged beast, and part of it is keynoting on topics from my consulting background, but mm-hmm. I use magic when I do that.
Yeah.
And the other piece is a more traditional corporate entertainment piece.
Right.
And so I dance across that line as needed to make the business work.
Now, when you're giving a keynote speech, I assume that you have some points that you're trying to make, and how long does it take, and how many tricks, if you will, do you put into it?
Well, I fit into 30, 45-minute, and 60-minute keynote slots, and so depending on the amount of time, I'll adapt. My main keynote that I'm doing now has 5 routines in it, and possibly one extra quick opener.
Yeah.
If it's a longer event, then I have a sort of a sixth point mm-hmm. that I can add something at the end.
Right.
So I can expand or contract that as needed. But I think 3 to 5 is typical for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a full show, obviously.
Right.
But each of those routines becomes the equivalent of what would normally be half a dozen slides for
right.
another type of presenter. So that in that setting, I'm not there to do magic, magic, magic.
Right.
I'm really expounding on some other points and insights, but using magic instead of other types of visual aids.
When you are giving those speeches, do you tend to give, they have generally the same points, but it's just as customized for that particular group? Or do you really try to customize every?
Well, no, I have core content that I start
with. That's what I'm asking.
That I'm sort of known for, and that I'm building my speaking mm-hmm. reputation around
yeah.
certain types of brands and core.
And expertise. You remember the NSA, the National Speaker Association?
Yeah, I am, and actually have done work at 2 of their most recent conferences.
Oh wow!
So,
mm-hmm.
but that being said, I think it's smart for any person who's going to be in front of a group that has an identity like that to at least be aware of who they are, and if you can find a way to let them know that you know who they are, that endears you to them.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're a performer of magic
mm-hmm.
or whether you're a speaker, with even if you have just strictly your own content, if you've at least Googled the company's name the day before you go in
yeah.
to see if some news has happened, or just the fact that you try to let them know that you respect them and their identity and what they do, even if you don't customize all of your material, that goes a long way
mm-hmm.
to letting them know that you respect them and they reciprocate.
That's what I do with the trade shows. Whenever that I'm working in a booth, that I memorize everything that's on their splash page at the
mm-hmm.
website, you will then know more than most any salesman in the whole booth.
It's true. It's true. Most of them are just, they're so in the forest, right, the forest for the trees kind
yeah.
of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you can take the 10 or 15 minutes
mm-hmm.
to step back and just look at this company
right.
as if, you know, look at their Hoover's page or look at their website and Google them to see if anything has come through their industry news in the last month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really make a big impact if you're even aware. Sometimes you go in and you know things that are happening before they've actually pushed it out through their own internal channels. And
right.
if you show up and say, oh, I heard about your stock sale, or I heard
right.
your about whatever, they'll be like, oh, what? What?
Yeah. How'd you know that? I have also heard before that if you go back and get 6 months of publications from an industry
okay.
and kind of read through some of the major articles of that, that's another way of prepping yourself to know not just about the company, but about the
industry
whole industry
trends, yeah.
and about who perhaps the competitors are, who the big players are by seeing the ads in those
well,
journals.
All of this goes to the point of even if, I mean, it's great if what you do either requires customization or they want you to customize it and are willing to pay for a certain degree of customization. then yeah, you could create a program, either magic or any other kind of presentation, that is crafted specifically for the way their organization is put together and the way that their job descriptions are laid out and who is responsible for which processes. And if you want to do it so that it's really customized for that corporation mm-hmm. or that association, that's great. But whether you're doing that or not, just doing the homework of getting some basic information about
background.
Your audience,
yeah, yeah.
That goes for everyone, and so few people do it that if you make the effort to do it, it'll make you stand out.
You can consider that almost as pre-show, you know.
It's pre-show work, but not the way we normally use it.
It's the long game
there. Your mama always told you to do your homework.
Right, right.
And it's just part of being a grown-up and doing this business is doing your homework.
You know, I think it's a similar thing. I've got an 80th birthday party. A gentleman, someone had contracted me for this, but I want to know more about him. You know, something about his past, you know, and some of his friends, his wife or wives, and perhaps children or something, so that way they might be brought into.
Career.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a birthday similar. I don't think he was 80. He was 85 or 90. It was a very elderly man, and kids and grandkids were there, and did a whole presentation with hats mm-hmm. that represented the different segments
idea.
Of his life. And
sure.
This is when he was wearing this hat.
I
think he worked in some kind of manufacturing, and there was a hat with the company name. And so, at any rate,
so it didn't have anything to do with magic, but it was just kind of a
I did work magic in doing some things with the hats, but the tricks are secondary. The main thing
that
is
a fact
to create some kind of structure so that whatever the message, I mean, you're there for a reason, and it's partially tricks, but the most important product that you're selling is how they feel at the end of your show.
That's right.
And so
about
whatever you
or the company
you,
or whatever.
The message, the company, mm-hmm. all of it together. And these people wanted to understand sort of the broad view of this man's life and how all these pieces fit together. And so that was more important than specifically, oh my gosh, I need to do a rope trick and a silk trick and a mm-hmm. Come up with a structure, a framework for how you're going to get the story told from A to B to C, and you know what's the beginning, middle, and end. All these things you already learned, and then go in and think, okay, what tricks, what magic do I know how to do, or can I mm-hmm. learn in the time available to do at a professional level that will help me communicate these points and create the emotions at each of the points along this road that I need to create so that this experience is what it needs to be. And that far transcends whether it's, you know, card at any number. Any card at any number is so strong, I have to end with that, right? That's, you know, you're sort of conventional wisdom about what tricks are strong and what tricks are not, and this has to be at the beginning and this has to be at the end. There's a certain theatrical strength to tricks, of course, but the most important thing is how does it fit together to tell the story that you're telling.
Well, I hope that whoever's listening to this will go back and rehear again what you've just said and take notes and write that down verbatim. I think that what you just said was platinum.
Well, thank you, but it's the same stuff we've all heard. And
not necessarily. I don't say all. I think there's some people who are going out there thinking, well, I want to do corporate shows. I want to work trade shows because I know this. I can do three flyer or double lift or you know, whatever type of trick.
You know,
it's not about the tricks.
There's plenty of top-tier trade show magicians in the world who do Professor's Nightmare.
Sure.
And cards. And it doesn't.
Three-ring routine or
the
whatever.
The trick is, it's great, and if you know, once you've got
it's
it and you start coming up with
the message.
Twists, but it's theater. This whole thing is storytelling. Human beings, whether they're at a 90-year-old birthday party mm-hmm. or a trade show floor or a keynote audience or a magic show audience, human beings are wired to process information in story form. And if you let that understanding permeate the way you put together a speech or a magic show or whatever it is that you're trying to communicate, and let the thread come first, this framework of how we're going to get from here to there, mm-hmm. what do I want them to know at the mm-hmm. end, how do I want them to feel about it, is there something I want them to do at the end of this, in a sales meeting or whatever, and that's the critical part. And then the magic is, you know, the paint on that canvas. Mm-hmm. The magic is, well, now how am I going to get their attention? And what do I have on my palette of of repertoire that I can pull from and say that will help me create this moment or communicate this idea. It seems you learned it in high school English, for crying out loud. This is
right.
The stuff you've learned in, when you were doing a play in junior high or whatever it is, that all of that stuff is, it's the same stuff. Human beings process information in the same way.
Isn't that why we go to the movies? It's like, tell me a story.
It's a story. Tell me a story.
Yeah. And also, you remember the movie if it stands out, it was well written, it was well presented and well performed.
Or if it was horrible.
Some things stand out because they're so bad, certainly.
Right.
But saying magic would be the same way, and more importantly, from a corporate standpoint, that the message that you're going to be delivering should be what people would remember long after that you're gone.
Right. And if you do any study of it couldn't hurt to watch movies. I mean, I'm not saying there's a formula, but there's a technique to storytelling and how you set up the exposition and introduce right. the characters and the conflict and all of that. And so it's fun to go watch movies as an analyst
right.
after you've watched it as an audience member and just let that influence the way that you put together a speech or a magic show, or both.
Another thing, whenever that you're preparing a speech, or you're trying to decide what is it that they might want to hear, that sometimes the best things are from your personal experiences that you're going to be talking about. Some people will go out, perhaps, and research books and find out, you know, what is it that people want to hear, you know. But there seem to be enough people who are out there talking about, you know, time management or negotiating skills or better salesmanship and things like that, you know. But mm-hmm. there might be some personal things that you can call on.
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. First of all, I can't remember when it was, a couple years ago, I wrote a blog post on credibility. Credibility counts. If you are faking it to try to do a show or some kind of presentation about something that you're researching just for the purpose of being able to book that speech, you know, when you go to a magic lecture, if the guy has put together all these tricks just so he can have something to lecture on.
Yeah.
And you can tell the difference between that lecture and someone who really knows their stuff mm-hmm. and has done it for real.
Right.
Well, the same goes for everything. The credibility shows through. So that's the one thing I would say is do draw from your own experience. What is it that you can speak authoritatively on? You don't have to be the best in the world, but if you have never led a team or built a team or managed a team, then a team building presentation may not be for you if you've never actually had yeah. been responsible
that's
for
right.
that.
That's true.
Or a management yeah. speech might not be for you. But
that doesn't mean you can't do it, but you've got a bigger hurdle.
You have a hurdle.
Yeah.
That's an example. And if you have a background in business or theater or media or entertainment, then you can find ways to use that and leverage that effectively. But if you try to present yourself as something that you're not, it shows and it's bad.
Isn't it
the second thing I will say, though, let me hit prong two of this. Is, like you said, there's a lot of people out there speaking on this topic or this topic or this topic. And that's true. But in the musical, Sunday in the Park with George, if you know me, you know I love musical theater. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where he's talking about the artist, George Surratt, it's his descendant, is talking about the fact that it's so hard to come up with something new. And the things he says, he feels like have been said before, and the things he paints and the things he creates as an artist, he feels like all of these things have been said before. And his grandmother looks at him and says, "Yes, but not by you. They've been said, but not by you." And so
wow.
your personal combination of experiences gives you an insight on your topic that is different than every other person that has spoken on that topic. If you do a little homework to look into your own past, look into your own work experience, look into your own family experience, your childhood, your education, what is it that you are really credibly equipped to talk about by your life?
Mm-hmm.
And do that. And the marketing side of that, nobody can compete with you.
Right.
Because you're building it on your personal palette is different than everyone else's. So if you paint from your palette, nobody else can compete with that.
That's why there was only one Houdini. there were so many people who were trying to be Houdini, but only one has lasted through time.
Cardini, same thing.
Yeah.
All the people who tried to do Cardini acts can't even name one.
Can you name another person who's doing Lance Burton's act? Remember when he was...
Everybody was trying.
Sure, they were all Lance clones, but you knew that's
he
what they were.
He was here. Did you talk to Lance?
Oh, I did talk with him. Yeah, what a great guy. Yeah. Very caring, sharing fellow. But the important thing is that when people are trying to find that character on stage or on close-up or whatever it's going to be, that there is no other you than you, and you can learn all the tricks that you want, but put your personality into it. Don't just read the instructions that come with it or watch the YouTube and see the video that someone else's presentation and think, well, that's the only way to do it.
Right.
It's not.
Well, and you know, I'll be honest with you. We all go through the phase where we're inspired or enamored with this type of performer or that type of performance or this genre. And I think it's just it's a part of the natural development that you don't know who you are until you try on a few suits and see what's comfortable. And so I'm not saying that that's, you know, it has always been thus. And I think thus it will always be, that we'll have this development. As you go through magic, you explore the different pieces and, like Eugene says, the different rooms. But one thing that will help you do it faster and put on a lot of costumes and take them off quickly and sort of find who your performing persona really is to do some theater. I've preached on that point so many times. Go do a play. Put down the magic. Go do a play. Learn to be on stage without a prop other than you and your voice and your story. And you know, and take on that character and take on other kinds of characters, and that experience will transform your magic.
That's why I think comedians also appreciate other comedians who will stand naked behind the microphone as opposed to a prop comedian or a prop magician. Because you're depending upon your props. And so you're right. If you actually are standing before an audience and you have just a script and that, yeah, you have it memorized, but you're just not repeating that. Otherwise, they could have a tape recorder up there or whatever. But, you know, yeah, you have to put your emotion, your personality and everything into it.
So, anyway, I agree. I think it's a great... I think it's a necessary training ground. If you want to be a great person on stage or in front of people, you can learn to be yourself better in some ways by learning to be other characters too along the way, which is sort of a contradictory, but I think it's true even so.
Well, now, talking about different venues, let's go in a different direction over here. You had told me yesterday about working at the on a cruise ship. I think the Magic Castle had something. Tell me a little bit more about this.
Well, this was in USA Today last week, so this is not a secret. Crystal Cruises has partnered with the Magic Castle in a program led by Rich Block that is called Magic Castle at Sea. And it is a way for Crystal to have close-up slash parlor-ish magic for small audiences, intimate crowds, 20 to 30 people, on each of their cruises every week.
Out of where? Different places?
All
different
over
ports?
The world.
Okay.
All over. The ships travel the world. And so Rich and the Castle have partnered with Crystal Cruises to provide a set of entertainers and performers that will be assigned to the different cruises and go out and give them this Magic Castle experience on the ship.
Yes.
And it has been exceedingly successful to the point that last week USA Today released an article on the best in cruise entertainment. And this program was listed for Crystal as one of the in the industry, one of the top shows that people need to be aware of is the Magic Castle at Sea program. And so Crystal is very happy with their results. The Magic Castle is enthusiastic. They've had to add extra performances beyond what was originally expected because the ticket, just like the Magic Castle is a hot ticket in L.A., this has really gone gangbusters on the ships. And so I had the opportunity to do one of these a few weeks ago over in Northern Europe. I'm certainly one of many who are doing this. I'm not anything like one of their top performers. But
and you're doing close-up?
I did kind of a parlor show, a small parlor show.
For about 20, 25 people?
Yeah, the smallest crowd I had was about 22, and we had one show with 31, and it was too many for the room, so they had to add performances, which is great when that work
gets around.
Two
or three a day, or what do you do?
Yeah, two or three a day.
Mm-hmm. For 7 days?
And usually not for the whole 7 days, but it depends on
what happens. So it's kind of like working the castle a little bit.
It's like working the castle to a degree. But, well, obviously it is, and it's 18 and up. These people are prepared to come to a magic show. Mm-hmm. They are not just happening through a restaurant and we're going to have magic.
Right.
This is presented as a classy, upscale.
And they have a special room for you and everything?
It is. It's in a room that would not be used until later. The room on the ship I was on was their nightclub room, mm-hmm. which had a wonderful stage area and seating, and it was very, just a wonderful opportunity to perform for people who were primed mm-hmm. to appreciate the art of magic.
Wow.
So it's a wonderful thing that Rich Block and the castle have done.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, as we start to close over here then, Joe, you and I have talked on the podcast over here before, but I know you have a blog which has great words of wisdom, just like you were talking about there earlier.
I'm online at turnermagic.com. TurnerMagic.com. There's a link to my blog on the bar right there on the menu, so it's very easy. Or if you must go directly, it's TurnerMagic.com/blog.
Okay.
I gave a very creative URL there. So.
Easy to remember. Very good. Well, thank you very much. The convention's going pretty well. I'm excited. This is just the first day, and golly, it's
the first day for the main convention. We had an early bird session last night.
Yes.
But Lance Burton is doing, we've got the new Lance Burton teen seminar that's mm-hmm. part of the IBM convention program now.
Right.
It's sort of a precursor to the IBM convention. And so we've had some young magicians here on site for several days already mm-hmm. working with Lance and with Jeff McBride and Eugene Berger and others on magic and the business and just being taught and mentored by them for several days already. Larry Haas, I shouldn't have left his name out. Once you start naming names, you're
going to... That's
right. So I apologize that has led into the convention. So those people and families have already been here on site. And then we had sort of an early arrival, early bird lecture last night. And so today is the first official big day of the conference. And President John Pye will be at the welcome ceremony in a few moments.
Party.
Yeah.
What time is that start?
So we'll have that here maybe in an hour, or two. So that's anyway, so yeah, but we're now officially underway.
And open for business. So if you guys are listening to this, there are still a lot of stuff to go. A lot more days and good shows in the evenings and everything then too. So again, if you're anywhere near Phoenix and you're just thinking about coming to the convention, they're still accepting registrations.
Yeah,
over
and it's as cool and brisk outside as you could possibly want.
Let me say that it certainly is here. Why do you need to go outside? Everything that you need
is
right in here.
Everything is inside.
That's
it's
right. And even the dealers. That was interesting. The dealers are in a big open forum. They've got
an atrium
up there.
It's interesting to have the dealers with windows.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful open atrium area.
Right. Instead of being stuck in a basement or in a garage or someplace.
It's not the dungeon this time.
Yeah.
It's out and about.
It's very nice. Yeah. Well, thank you, Joe, very much.
You bet, Scott. Thanks.
That was Joe Turner. And don't forget, that was Turner Magic.
.com/blog
if you want to hear the rest of it. So for now, this is Scotty out. Well, for those of you who listened to the podcast from the Dry Heat Classic the other night, I just mentioned in passing that when I was talking with Mike Stratman that seated behind us was Kenton Knepper. And I figured that since this is his home turf, they would probably run into him. Sure enough, here he is. Hey, Kenton, how are you?
Great. Good to see you. glad we got you here in Phoenix for a change.
Yes. And so this is, I think, the first time I know of that we've had the convention in Phoenix.
As far as I can remember,
there really hasn't been any major convention here.
Nope. No, this is the first international convention.
Did they used to have conventions in Phoenix? I mean, a regional or statewide convention? Or?
Well, we've always had some sort of events here. You know, for many years we've done various things, but You know, as we all get busy and run around the world,
sure.
There's less and less of that that's happened. So this is the first time, really, we've had a big convention for a long time.
Right.
You know?
Well, I was just wondering, something like a Texas Association of Magicians, if they have some
right.
sort of an Arizona Association, or if they're
no, they're funded. No, they're you know, both SAM and IBM represented
yep.
here. But no, we had, of course, the 6.5 Mentalist group and some of those
yep.
other side groups through the years, and we've done little things. But that's kind of more like
right.
what's been happening. So.
Well, this, I don't mean to make a point, but it has been kind of a hotbed of magic. I mean, people may
yeah.
or may not necessarily recognize, you know, what Phoenix is, has been, and was, and it still is, you
right.
know. You were talking about the 6.5 Mentalists. We'll talk about that in just a minute.
Sure.
But for an example, I remember that Lee Earl had the Manifestations
Manifestations
here.
Theater was here. You know, Harry Anderson used to show up for that off and
yep.
on. Jack Sutherland's Sun Magic, which was legendary.
Legendary magic shop here.
In fact, when I sold all my Stage Illusion show, it went through Jack. You know, it's on magic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, but you think back, you think, you know, Andre Cole.
Right.
Obviously. You know,
he's here. And his son,
here.
Tim. Yep.
Tim,
yep.
you know. We go back to Easley's. You know, if anybody
Bert
does
Easley's.
The lean,
oh, yeah, sure.
you know, if anybody was the lean, thank you, Bert Easley, you know.
Yeah.
And again, somebody that's. Should be remembered more than he is, but you know, did some amazing things. But really, there's been a long legacy here. Finney and I, you know, have been out here, I don't know, 30, 35 years, something like that.
Yeah.
But when I moved out here, one of the things that happened is shortly thereafter, we started mulling around and went, well, isn't this strange? Look at this. So-and-so lives out here. And pretty soon we went, well, let's see, Mark Strivings, Doc Hilford, me, Larry Becker, Robert Blumley, Dr. Drews,
yep.
We all ended up in the same place for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's
then,
a confluence of events.
Yeah, and same with Finney and Andre and everybody else. And so a very big creative mental and magic community that was centered out of here and
right.
still is. You know, still
right.
is.
Yeah, the magic shops that were here, now those, kind of like most other brick-and-mortar magic
yeah.
shops, have kind of gotten whittled down, and the one that they've got now basically is kind of a costume shop, as I recall it.
Well, yeah, Easley's has become, as you know, costumes support a big part
they said
of
it's a very small
thing,
showcase.
A small
of their,
magic shop.
Yeah.
Right, and you know, our friend Barry Shore, who's been around for a lot of years, has Barry still has his shop, but it's kind of run out of his home now, which
mm-hmm.
when I was growing up, that was not uncommon either, you know, that
mm-hmm.
would happen.
Sure.
But yeah, there are not the brick and mortar shops that
anywhere,
had,
but yeah.
anywhere,
yeah.
And so we have less than that.
Right.
But we have, you know, good friends that pop by rather
right.
regularly, like
oh,
Eugene,
sure.
who just walked by,
yeah.
and Jeff, and some other
yeah.
people. So, yeah, I mean, it's always amazing to me that I moved here kind of on a happenstance and ended up being around all the people I needed to be around. And
right.
So, yeah.
Tell me about the 6.5 Mentalists.
6.5 was, it kind of started as a fluke. Robert Blumley got Larry Becker to move here, as I understand it. And
oh,
then
nice.
They were goofing around.
Isn't he?
Yeah. And they were goofing around and they said, you know, really, there's some other mentalists here. We should get some more mentalists together. So slowly they started to get together, and that was Hilford and Mark Strivings and all these guys, and then they sucked me into it.
Yeah.
And really, it became one of the big creative outlets for mentalism for some time.
Mm-hmm.
We did a 3-volume set of, well, videos back then, later DVDs for A1 Multimedia.
Yeah.
And then, you know, traveled and did some things together. And then once we'd done all that, everybody kind of went their separate ways again. You know,
yeah,
so.
But for a moment in time.
But yeah, we had a good run of 6-7 years there together. So
yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
When we were talking the other night at the Wild Horse, you were
yeah.
telling me about the Sylvia Brown.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, it was the casino booked me for, they were bringing Sylvia Brown in. I don't know for sure, but I assume she was there for several days on end to do talks and things.
And readings,
what have you. The last day, there was a VIP kind of lunch with Sylvia Brown advertised. And so basically, the casino called me and said, look, they're going to do some drawings to give away free readings for Sylvia. And then there's going to be some belly dancers, and there's going to be a line outside, you know, before everybody get in.
Yeah.
So we needed to do close-up, like, you know, because we want somebody who can do close-up and keep people happy and stuff.
Sure.
So we want you to do close-up magic, like,
people
outside,
waiting line,
people in waiting line, and then once they get in for, like, an hour once they sit down, mm-hmm. in between the belly dancing. You know?
Okay.
So,
okay.
So, you know, it's work. So hey. That's what I did.
Check cash.
And, yeah. And it actually was great. I was very happy. The casino was happy. And you know, this is one of those things that we were talking with some of my friends earlier today, that I'm kind of stuck in this box of being a mentalist. But, you know, again, a lot of times I've worked close-up through the years.
Right.
And one of the things I love about that is I walked off the onto the floor of the casino after working for a couple hours,
yeah.
and people who I've never met before would run from the casino across the floor to get to me and give me a hug and say, thank you, you were the best thing we had. But
wow.
the Sylvia Brown event.
How nice.
It's like, that's one of the great things about magic when you do it well. You know,
yes.
And by well, I don't mean talent. I mean, you connect with people.
You connect.
You know?
Yes.
And what a wonderful, that makes it up, you know, for all the years of practice, getting people that just go, thanks, I feel so much better.
You made my day better,
yeah,
made my life better.
Yeah, just,
I've been feeling down, and
right.
what I just saw was
yeah,
just
and I've had people that
up.
Just tell me horrific stories of what their
going
life
through.
Has been
yeah.
and what they were going through and how, you know, a little bit of uplifting messages in the middle of card tricks, because you can do that, believe it
yeah,
or not,
sure.
Makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, let me give a quick pitch to where I think we're headed in magic these days.
I do want to hear.
I really think we have two roads we can go down. We can go down the egomania trick thing, which is common, you know, mm-hmm. look at me, or we can go down the path of, let me remind you how impressive and important you are as a human being, and how you have access to all these wonders within yourself, and how precious and important you are, and how to treat others in that way. And if we can do that in performance, my bet is that is going to be what the public wants to see, more of those people than the people right. that say, look at how I can read your mind. You know?
How do you get to that point?
Well, part of it is understanding principles rather than tricks.
Okay.
I know that's not as sexy at first, because you go,
of course,
why do I want to learn principles?
Yes, you want the toys.
That's boring.
Yeah.
But when you learn some of those principles, then you realize, wow, I can connect to people and get them on deep levels, not because I'm tricking them, because I'm connecting with them on a real, deep, honest, emotional level
right.
in the midst of doing my trick.
Right.
And trick I already like doing anyway. So, you know. So it's really a shift. We just have to make kind of a conscious shift towards wanting to connect more to people and be less about our ego and more about them. And we don't have to preach or any of that stuff.
Right.
You don't even have to be a good storyteller. You know, if you're Eugene, you're Doc, you can do that. If you're not, good
right.
luck. You probably shouldn't be. But it doesn't have to be about that. You know, even, I said this in Wonder Words, it can be as simple as playing cards that people pick tell us a lot about your personality. And you're the kind of person that seems very affable and warm, you know.
Sure.
So you probably picked a heart, because that's what people like that too,
oh, yeah.
you
yeah.
know. And they go, aw, and they say, but you're yeah. also very intelligent, you know. So you didn't
hitting them on that emotional
you know,
level.
And so you're talking about what you honestly get from the person, you know, which I call, you know, real mentalism, because you're honestly perceiving things
sure.
and just saying it.
That's right.
But you're relating it to the card you peaked or forced. But now it becomes about them. You know,
let me share a story with you that I think I've shared with my listeners before. And I was checking into a hotel so many years ago, and I was in the business world, and I was with my boss. And as we were checking in late at night, like 11 o'clock, my boss said, you know, that he's a magician. And it's like, of course, said, show me a trick. And so I had an invisible deck. And so I said, I want you to think of a card. And I remember like it was last night. She said the four clubs. And so I said, it's interesting, because that would indicate to me, you know, that you're a social person. You know, you're loving, you're a kind person. And that, you know, because a club tells me that, you know, that. And also because it's a four, that you're going to be traveling sometime soon. I've made it into a longer reading, but I'll make this short. The point is that, and then I said, and then I spread the cards open, and it's like only one card's upside down. It was your four of clubs.
Yeah.
And then she said, how did you know that I was going to be going to England with my cousin 6 months from now? You know, and it's like, it didn't matter about the card, you know, suddenly it appeared.
Not.
But it was all about me. And like, she heard things that she thought I said.
That's right.
And I connected with her, and I thought,
exactly.
This is strong.
This, yeah, that's what makes them different. And, you know, really, my pitch to that is really simple. If you look at any other kind of art form that we appreciate, and it doesn't matter, whatever you particularly like, whether it's music or art or, you know, whatever,
yeah.
We love that because it means something to us. It connects,
yeah.
you know, not because it freaks us out or we go, wow, that guy's really good and I'm not.
Right.
It's never that. It's always, that reminds me of beauty in the world, or that reminds me of how wonderful life is, or how much I matter to others.
Sure.
That's why we go see films. That's why we go listen to music.
Sure.
So if we want to be treated like legitimate art, we have to act like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And
and the acting like it isn't trick, trick, trick. It's like, how do I move you too? You
know? I hope everyone's
how
listening
do I share
to what
myself?
You're saying. Yeah, that's exactly
you know?
Right. Right on
so,
target.
So that's what I, you know, what I'm about. I think we have two paths we can go by. I predict Mendelism is going to take off in some directions like that, and people are going to think be really shocked.
Yeah.
But once they realize the public's reaction to that, everybody's going to start deciding to connect with people too.
Yeah. Well, we're getting ready for the autograph session, and you're going to be one of the autographers, and so I'm going to get off the table because they might want me to sign something, and they'll say, who are you again? So,
of course they'll want you to sign things. But just sign Banachek.
That's right, put Banachek's name on. Ken, thank you very much.
My
I think
pleasure,
we talked
always.
Before about this, and I'd ask you for what your magic word is, and I think maybe you'd said before connect.
Connect, yeah.
Yeah.
Connect
I think
is
that
it.
Sounds
yeah.
like your word.
Absolutely.
Because podcast is called yeah, the magic word, and that's yours. Kenton, thanks very much. That was Kenton Nepper. And from the floor of the IBM convention for day one, this is Scotty out.